I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to talk about workplace manners. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. How do you write about manners now without sounding like a dinosaur or too prim? Judith Martin is admired as Miss Manners because she has cut an original swath through the manners landscape. She is wry and on target, and in her new book on workplace behavior says it's important to hang on to some old manners while inventing new ones to match the times we're in. The workplace romance versus sexual harassment, dignity for the fired coworker, pocketing the cell phone in meetings with your colleagues, invasive personal questions, what to wear to work, getting an email by mistake, do you tell the coworker you saw it? The book is Miss Manners, Mind Your Business, and it is co-written by Nicholas Ivor Martin, an executive, and also Judith Martin's son. They are now writing together. Judith Martin, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Well, you've got me thinking about how often manners must change. Do you think they change every generation?
It's constantly evolving. I try to keep this quiet because when people realize that manners change, they think they can make up the changes. And no, I do it. They inevitably make up changes that benefit only themselves. And so you will very often have young people saying, oh, nobody expects thank you letters. No, just the people who give presents and do favors expect thank you letters. Or you'll have people of all ages saying, no one cares if you answer invitations anymore. Just hosts care. They care plenty. So unauthorized changes I try to slap down, but there are plenty of legitimate changes and changes for the better, which I welcome.
I have a writer friend who, when she sends out an invitation, says, please respond, it's the civilized thing to do.
It's a shame to have to scold your guests before they even show up, isn't it? You would think people would know that.
Yeah. So this idea about looking at the workplace is a great one. The work is changing in a kind of revolutionary way, as we know. And so there are all these new things, and we're all together at all different ages confronting, well, what do we do in this situation? I guess that's why you wrote this book.
Yes, it is. It's driven by the mail that I get, which tells me what people are worried about, what their problems are.
And what is the most popular topic with people? Is it cell phones?
Well, that is one. But no, the most popular one since the invention of the open office plan has been the coworker who smells bad, talks loud, et cetera, et cetera. The obnoxious person at the next desk in a situation that claims to have been designed because it will make everyone friends because they'll be thrown together.
And not so. It's really a cost-effective thing to do.
Of course it is. Yeah. That's why they do it. But it has created enormous problems because throwing people together does not necessarily make them love one another.
The internet, we need to get to this idea of friendships in the workplace, which we will, as you do in the book. You say just as the internet has allowed people to become more abrasive, this has seeped into the workplace culture.
Very much so. People who even work within a few yards of one another tend to email nowadays. And email gives people, or text or whatever, and this gives people the illusion when you don't see them that you don't have to worry about their reactions. And so, yes, there is a temptation to be nastier electronically than you would be face-to-face when you would be a little afraid of being slapped down.
Yeah, there's at the beginning of your book, you have a letter from someone who says, I'm not sure if this is a dilemma for me or an adjustment. He was hired in this wonderful position. He could pretty much do what he wants, create the position. And his boss spoke to him and said, you're not socializing with your colleagues. And the reason this guy doesn't is that it's really pretty much gossiping about other people, and he just had no time for it. But now he's being scolded by his boss.
Isn't that extraordinary that bosses are scolding people for not goofing off enough? The whole idea that you have to socialize in the workplace is a really, really bad idea. Not so much because it wastes time, but it does the opposite of what it's intended to do. As I say, there is this pressure, this feeling that, oh, if you socialize with people, if you're thrown together with them, you work with them, you'll all get along wonderfully and you'll be more efficient. And the fact is that the professional veneer, which used to exist before this idea ran rampant, is what prevented people from annoying one another because they didn't know each other that well. They were able to deal cheerfully and happily with other people. They weren't expected to be friends with them. And the socializing is an enormous time consumer on and off the job. One of the main thrusts of this book is that we have never readjusted the workplace life so that people can have a personal life. It never worked well because the idea was supposed to be that the man had no personal responsibilities at all because he had a wife who had all of them. And now that, as I say, was a really hideous idea, sticking both of them with half a line. But now that women are in increasing numbers in the workplace, who's supposed to be taking care of personal social life? And the answer is, everybody is very hard pressed to do it, and having feeling obliged to have drinks with the gang after work cuts into time of whatever life you want to have—a real life with family, with friends, with children, whatever it is that you choose. Something that is not work.
Well, I loved your answer to this man writing in who was amazed that his boss was yelling at him for not, you know, hanging out with his colleagues more. And you said your explanation to your boss should be that while you esteem your colleagues and feel privileged to work with them, you are just too excited about your work to take many breaks.
Yes. people are always writing me asking what can they say when they are pressured to participate in a office party and all that kind of thing, or go out socializing with other people. And I say, you know, you have no hesitation telling your family and friends, blowing them off because you have work demands. Have you ever thought of on the job saying, I have work to do?
Mm-hmm. This is a letter that so stunned me. Last night, I just couldn't even believe it. This is a person writing to you, Dear Miss Manners, last year I asked my husband's sister, who was having the family Thanksgiving dinner at her house, what I could bring. She insisted that it was easier for her to do it all herself and that we should just give her money. I offered two more times to bring something, but she only wanted money. My husband, I can't believe
I know.
I'm saying.
Charging the family for Thanksgiving dinner, and you know that is a one letter among many such letters that I've received.
Well, what is happening?
What's happening is that people are applying business manners to social situations. You know, why should I spend all the money to entertain other people? Why not charge them? And at the same time, this is even more peculiar, they're applying social manners to the workplace. And I'm saying, hey, how about switching back? You don't charge people for dinner, but this is pervasive throughout what ought to be social life. I mean, nowadays, if people want romance, what do? They take out an ad and they hold quick interviews. This is what you used to do for job applications.
Oh, boy. So what about the reverse? I have been, talked to by people who say, I have an idea. What about this kind of a dinner party? And as I'm listening and I'm thinking about how expensive this is going to be for somebody, I will say, hey, why don't we all chip in? This is with friends, not with family. And so do you think that's insulting to the
home? No, a frank cooperative party is fine. I mean, a lot of groups do this. You know, you have a book group and everybody brings something. That's fine, as long as it's understood that this is a cooperative party. It's not that you're giving a dinner party, but what has happened is people call up and say, oh, you know, I'd like to invite you to dinner, and then they tell you to bring the main course, or charge you, as in that case. The ancient virtue of offering hospitality has undergone this financial analysis that is more appropriate to the workplace, where people feel, well, why should I pay for everything, do everything? If a group of people want to get together and split it, fine. But it's not giving, then no one is really the host, or everyone is.
So there's a whole section on getting into a workplace, the hiring section. And you say that when you're attempting to enter the business world, you need to learn to be someone else. It's called having a professional identity. What do you mean?
Well, the idea has been around now for some time that to be honest, you have to, be the same all the time. And well-meaning parents, instead of preparing their children for various different situations that require different behavior, will say, oh, just be yourself. Well, whatever that means. I mean, who else would you be? But there are different aspects to yourself. You're not even the same self before you and after you've had your breakfast coffee. And there are different situations. And this generation that has been brought up under this catch-all phrase of be yourself will treat a job interviewer, someone who could give him a job or not, the same way he treats his pals or anyone else. And it's very non-professional and doesn't get the job.
I've been on both sides of this. I remember 1,000 years ago applying for a job as a writer at an insurance company, and I was just out of college, and the man who was interviewing me said, well, why are you interested in this job? And I said, I'm interested in finding creative work, and I think this is it. And he said, oh, yes, creative work, you know. I left there horrified, and I thought, what in the world kind of atmosphere is this that creativity would be? But from your point of view?
I would interpret this slightly differently. I would interpret this as the man saying, you're asking what this job can do for you, and I want to know what you can do for us before I hire you.
Yeah.
And be creative. Well, come on, somebody right out of college entering a professional life ought to be willing to learn what it's all about before feeling that they can be the creative person in charge of designing it.
We're going to take a quick...
I would have been wary to hire someone like that. I would much rather you say, look, I'm interested in what you all do. I'd like to learn more. Here's what I know about it. And I see it as a challenge. Not that I see it as an opportunity for me to be creative.
All right. This is Judith Martin. She has co-authored with Nicholas Martin this book, Miss Manners Minds Your Business, about etiquette or behavior in the workplace. We're going to be right back with more conversation and your calls at 203-776-9677. can find what we talk about on the show online anytime at WNPR.org. Right now, you can see delicious recipes for dinner, value wines, easy cocktails, and more, including the best chicken cacciatore ever for your Super Bowl party. Just click on programs at WNPR.org for the Faith Middleton Show. And you will see a link for all the Fuchmoose recipes right there. Our guest, I'm happy to say, is Judith Martin, who is co-author of this new book, Miss Manners, Mind Your Business. It is all about behavior, etiquette in the workplace. And if you have something that you've noticed in your workplace, whether you're the worker or the manager, we'd love to hear from you, because I'd like to hear what Judith Martin has to say about your situation. 203-776-WNPR. Judith, I am interested in this this letter from a college student about to graduate, entering the workforce, and she says, "I have heard and seen that most people choose to dress conservatively at an interview. How conservative should I go? Am I allowed to wear a pantsuit, or is the skirt suit the only choice for me? I like to be able to show a touch of my personality and style in the way that I dress. What would you most recommend for college females ready to get out in the real world? Is this the time when dressing conservative is the ultimate best choice?" And you say, "Miss Manners hopes it doesn't disappoint you to hear that pantsuits are no longer considered cutting edge. Female senators wear them to work." This idea about clothes, to what degree you're kind of mad at Casual Fridays?
Yes, because this is another way in which the professional demeanor has been sort of sabotaged. When you dressed for work in a way that symbolized the kind of work you do, I mean, doesn't necessarily have to be conservative. Maybe you work in an artistic field. But when you did that, you knew you were ready for work. We have this whole phony demeanor of you're not really at work. You can dress as if you're at leisure. You address people and chat with them as if they are your friends and not your colleagues, and so on. And it is all added up to losing the professional demeanor. When you go into a store, for instance, do you really want the person to start chatting with you and treating you as a friend, or do you want to have answers to your questions about the merchandise or the prices? Idea that, and it's so phony, you know, we Americans pride ourselves on not being phony, is all this pretended friendship and leisure activity, which is not leisure and shouldn't be.
I had a relative who was in a corporate dining room and said, a cafeteria, and said that it reminded her of being in high school, where the cool kids still all sat together at these tables, and that there wasn't a sense of welcoming the newcomer to the table. You know, maybe not your favorite person in the company, but a kind of collegiality that made people...
Collegiality is great, and it's not the same thing as friendship. Now, friendship sometimes develops from these situations. But yes, collegiality would say that the new person who is new there should be welcomed and shown around and treated with some courtesy. But if you pretend you're all friends, well, you don't happen to like that person, so you're not going to be friends with them.
Barbara Faith Middleton with Judith Martin, Miss Manners. Go ahead, Barbara.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Miss Manners, I've loved you since you taught me the raised eyebrow. In response to 30 years ago, and people used to say, "When's your baby due?" And there sort of wasn't one. But now in the workplace, I know I'm sensitive, but this is beyond that. I'm allergic to fragrance, and it makes me really sick, and I've never figured out the best way to say, you know, scrub up and come back.
Yeah, that's not the right approach, as you well know. But suppose you said, "Oh, you have that wonderful perfume, and I'm sorry, I have a bad reaction to it, and I wish I could enjoy it." But you probably want to save it for your social life anyway.
Well, that's nice.
The passive aggressive response.
The person, as you, as I say,
and
as you
then there's
of course
the
understand.
You
flatter
in the office.
Them. Yes.
Did you say gum cracking?
How do you deal with the gum cracking neighbor in the office?
Well, again, I'm so sorry it annoys it that it seems to strike me the wrong way and so on. I wonder if you could please save it for your lunch hour.
Save the gum.
Do it apologetically, not in attacking. People like come out fist first on most things.
Yeah, I get it.
And it's not the right approach.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Barbara.
You're welcome.
For
I'm
your
glad
call.
You're good at the raised eyebrow. Isn't that useful?
Yeah. This is another one that stunned me. I had no idea this was going on. This is a member of a search committee who is talking. And I'm reading this from your book. And this committee member says, notice that she didn't say anything about her family. And he's complaining. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't trust someone who can't talk about her feelings or who's not willing to be open with us. He preferred the candidate who told the committee how he had dealt with his wife's leaving him, illustrating his progress from destructive anger to acceptance to finding someone wonderful, his son's learning disability, and his daughter's depression.
More than you'd want to know, isn't it?
So what? There is now a thing among search committees that people are supposed to talk about personal things.
This is all part of an idea that's now half a century old of open up and tell everything, tell all your feelings. You remember that started 50-some years ago, that we would all love one another if only we knew everything there was to know about the other person. Well, if that were the case, I mean, who do you know more about than the person you're about to divorce? You don't necessarily get along better. And if I were on that search committee, that's the person I would run from, because I thought that's the person who's going to be telling us every day his little feelings and his little triumphs and ups and downs, and not going to get anything done.
Here was a doozy. This is a person who writes to you and says, I have referred an acquaintance of mine to work at the company where I work. And the person was hired. And as a result, I'm going to be receiving this generous referral bonus, which I thought was interesting. I didn't know such a thing existed. So this new hire, the friend, says, hey, listen, since you're getting a bonus and they've hired me, I think you should split that money with me.
Yeah, that's known as a kickback.
Well,
and it's unethical, if not illegal. I was horrified by that, too.
So is this a standard thing that there are referral bonuses?
Every industry is different and every group is different, but it's not the first time I've heard of that. No.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Here was a very interesting section that you have done in your book, Miss Manners, Mind Your Business, about the colleague who is fired. And you're saying in here that even if the colleague has been fired for the right reasons and has done something that you do not approve of, that person is still deserving of dignity.
I believe everybody is deserving of dignity. Not necessarily admiration, my mm-hmm. goodness, but dignity, yes. Yes, I think that's one of the basic things of etiquette and manners.
But how do people, I mean, what do you say to someone who is either downsized or fired for good reason, for cause? What do you say to that person?
Well, there's a difference, of course, between the downsizing and the fired for cause. And a lot of it, particularly with the downsizing, is what you don't say. You don't say, oh, well, you know, you're lucky to be out of here, and I've got to do more work now that they have fewer people here and all that. Most people don't know what to say to anybody who's been fired, so they just clam up in the same way that when someone has died, a lot of people turn away from the bereaved because they say, oh, I don't know what to say. You say, I'm sorry. Now, one of the tragedies of losing a job, aside from the central tragedy of having lost the job, is that people who have bought into this idea of office being one big family and friends are stunned that they no longer hear from their colleagues. Well, they were colleagues, and they're no longer colleagues. They weren't really friends unless there was an outside friendship formed, in which case I would hope they would still hear from them. But they mistake this, and this happens at all levels. Years ago, I used to, as a journalist, cover embassies here in Washington, where I live. And there were a couple of ambassadors who retired in Washington because they said, oh, we have so many friends here, foreign ambassadors. And then not long afterwards, it was, oh, people are so callous, we never hear from anybody anymore. Well, they didn't have friends. They had a pseudo-social life with people who were in positions that required them to be on these pseudo-friendly terms with them.
I once was witness to a couple of people in a workplace who didn't get along at all, and they were both in significant positions and had to deal with each other. The boss tried and tried, and then finally said, if you two don't work this out yourselves, you're going to be fired from this company. And I've thought of it many times. What do you think?
Well, I think that people are obliged to get along with their colleagues. They don't, deep down, they don't have to like them. But that is what professional manners require, that they be cooperative and polite and treat each other with dignity, even if they don't like them.
I was also witness to someone who explained a great idea to another, to a coworker, and the coworker said, I'm taking that idea. And the other one said, what do you mean? I just told you that idea. And they said, you know, this is fair in the workplace. This is how it goes.
Well, yes, you should know that they're your rivals often and not necessarily your friends. Of course, if I were the person with the idea, I would have gotten in first and run quickly and said, as I just explained to so-and-so, I think we should do this. And then when so-and-so appears, yeah, we already heard that. I mean, that's a dirty trick. And one should watch out for those things. But I would consider that an unacceptable behavior, stealing someone's idea. It's ethical rather than in the realm of etiquette.
There is a major corporation in Pennsylvania where if you speak disrespectfully to another colleague in the workplace, higher or lower, you're out within 2 hours.
Excellent. Sounds like a good place to work.
And they have, one of the executives was explaining it to me, they have all sat at their desks and watched major people ushered to the parking lot for because there was, you know, in their view, there just is no excuse for disrespect.
My view, too. I think I'll go work there when you tell me what
it is. Tell you off the air. What about paying attention in meetings? On the one hand, people have to stay in touch, and they're expecting messages to be coming in and work in jobs where it's important to stay in touch, and you don't want to miss certain calls and messages. And on the other hand, it's now just a habit to pull out your cell phone and not even make eye contact in a meeting.
And a lot of those people aren't taking messages. They're playing games or they're shopping or something. That's the thing about your tablet or your phone. You could be doing anything. This is up to the person who runs the meeting to declare that we will have them or not. Now, if it's a business that they really have to be every second alert to messages, and I think there are very few such businesses, but if it's a business like that, then I think that should be tolerated. But I think in most cases, you have a situation where the person who's calling the meeting says, put away the electronics. I'll make this as brief as possible. And if everybody's not paying attention, maybe the meeting shouldn't have been called in the first place because it's useless.
This is Judith Martin, who is Miss Manners and has co-written this book with Nicholas Martin called Miss Manners, Mind Your Business. And it's looking at etiquette in the workplace. It's funny, those two words, etiquette and manners.
I have made a distinction between them. Manners being the principles, which are eternal, like such as respect for other people, and etiquette being the particular forms of behavior in a certain time, certain place. And etiquette changes, but the principles of manners remain the same.
What about managers who have to make decisions fairly quickly and make decisions based on lots of other meetings? And coworkers will sometimes ask question after question after question about, well, why does this need to be done of a manager? And a manager can sometimes end up saying, you know, because just do it, which is not the best response.
If there's a time element, it could be. I mean, if I were running a fire department and somebody said, well, why are we using this hose instead of that hose? I'd say, let's just do it, put this fire out, and we'll talk later.
Judith Martin is our guest. We're going to take a quick break, and we'd love to hear from you at 203-776-WNPR. If you have a workplace issue that you've been watching, struggling with, or want to comment on, we'd love to hear from you. 203-776-WNPR. We'll be right back. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, that's FAITHWNPR, or join the conversation with us on Facebook, search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening, and to our talented team, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. I also would like to thank our guest Judith Martin, who has been Miss Manners for a long time and beloved for her wry, direct manner. And she has done this book, Miss Manners, Mind Your Business, along with Nicholas Martin. And it is just new to the market, and it's fun to have you on the show. We've got a call. Jen, go ahead, please.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
And welcome.
I always love your show.
Thank you so much.
So I work in an educational setting, and, you know, we have to work closely together to get the job done. And I unfortunately work with a coworker who just has always been extremely cold and standoffish toward me. I've made every effort to just have a cordial relationship, but she really doesn't even acknowledge my existence. Not that I need her to, but we have to work together. So I'm wondering if you have any suggestions, like, you know, what? How do you deal with difficult people?
Jen, well, that's a good one.
Yes, and it depends. I mean, is she just not warm toward you, or is she uncooperative as far as your work is concerned? Does it affect the work?
Sometimes both. Yes, because sometimes I have a question, it's difficult to get an answer. Sometimes, you know, just trying to work out some mutual problem-solving skills, and I just don't get any cooperation. It's just very frustrating.
I think you have to address it to each particular situation. I really need an answer on this immediately, or I need to know what you're going to do on this, because I have to do my part. That she's standoffish toward you, that's both too vague and really not a professional requirement that she be warm toward you. But the individual matters, I think you should address very firmly.
Right, and it's interesting because we've even had something called nonviolent communication training in our environment, and it hasn't seemed to had a positive effect.
Well, that's the thing about workplaces. You have to deal with all, or about life, you have to deal with all kinds of people. Some of them are difficult. But if you narrow it down to the particular problem, if it's a major problem, it's something you can bring to a superior. But otherwise, I would just each time, I'm sorry, but we're on a deadline and I need to know this, rather than you're not friendly enough.
Thank you so much, Jen. Appreciate your call. Good luck with it.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. 203-776-WNPR. How does gender figure in terms of the kinds of personal questions that get asked during interviews or maybe when you're a new hire in a particular company? How I'm talking about the kinds of things like, do you plan on, I mean, people are savvier about this now because of sexual harassment, but, you know, how long do you plan on working? Are you married? Are you going to have children? What's okay?
These questions have become illegal now, and unfortunately, we have to turn to the law when etiquette fails, when it is simply not observed. And certainly, when I was a reporter decades ago, and for many decades, that was commonplace. And as you say, the gender factor, women, if you were single, the thing was, well, you'll just get married and leave us. If you were married, well, you'll just have a baby. If you had children already, it was, well, you're probably not paying attention because you're worried about the children. And if you didn't, you were a bitter old maid, and then they didn't want you either. So there was no winning on that. And it was so pervasive that it had to be made illegal. And it is. It's discrimination.
Abby, Faith Middleton with Judith Martin, Miss Manners. Go ahead, Abby.
Yeah, hi. Is this Kate Middleton?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, hi. It was an interesting talk show. I'm driving back to Worcester. I work in Hartford and I reside in Worcester. So it's kind of an interesting talk on work culture, and it kind of brings up a lot of topics. And I myself work in the public sector. I'm a dentist myself. I work in the school system, in school-based dental centers.
Oh, good.
So, you know, yeah. So I've been in this job for over a year now, like about 13 months, so just over a year. And yeah, I kind of faced some kind of, just kind of inappropriate behavior from some of my auxiliaries, you know, colleagues. The first 6 months, not recently, but the first 6 months during my probationary period. And there were days, you know, when I went home very upset, you know, as to feeling like I should just quit the job, you know. But I kind of hung in there, and my supervisor, I think she had faith in me, and, you know, she just changed the people who I was working with, and things are much better now. So I just, you know, wanted to share that with you.
How did she change the people you work with?
No, what happens is that, you know, I'm a dentist, so I go to a different school every day in Hartford. You know, Hartford has a lot of schools. The Hartford district itself has like 48 schools.
Yeah.
So we go to a different school every day. We can't obviously cover all 48 schools. A lot of these schools have on-site dental clinics. You know, it's right next to the nurse's office.
Uh-huh.
So we treat children in the school itself. You know, most of these kids are needy. They are from poor families, you know, low-income families, and they don't have access to care. You know, they don't have a dentist. They don't have, you know, transportation to get to a dental office. So we try to take care of the dental needs in the school setting within the school hours itself. So obviously, I work with different assistants different days of the week.
I see.
This was during the first 6 months of my, you know, when I was new on board. You know, so and one or two of the assistants were, you know, were not very nice to me, and they were, you know, like, you know, not saying anything in front of me. One was kind of actually ill-treating me a little bit, and there were days when I was like, you know, not I was like feeling really bad about the job and, you know, about myself, and I wanted to stay on. I liked the job and I liked the supervisor, mm-hmm. and I liked working with kids, but it was just that, you know, colleagues were, you know, not conducive to, you know, like they didn't. And these are people who have been in the system for 20 plus years. And, you know, instead of encouraging a new employee and, you know, helping him find his feet in the workplace, so they were trying to ridicule him and, you know, backfight against him. And that was kind of really sad.
Well, here, you know, Judith Martin, this reminds me about the question or the idea of when you say, that's enough. You know, we're going to be talking about the art of quitting, actually, this week. You know, when do you say that's enough? And, you know, when do you say, I'm just going to hang in there because, you know, I'm getting a paycheck and this is a job?
Well, exactly. And the job market is terrible now, as you well know. And it is not going to be easy to find jobs. And so there will be more people, I believe, hanging in there. Even in very unpleasant situations, which is unfortunate, but a fact of life. And all the more reason, I keep saying this, that you need these protections of that veneer of professional behavior that blocks people from expressing their worst thoughts and feelings.
Thank you so much for your call, by the way. Anna Faith Middleton with Miss Manners. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm just calling because you had a second caller on there. She was a female. She said she couldn't get along with her boss. And you mentioned to take it to the superior. Well, my question is this. Say you have taken it to superiors, and they do nothing about it, and it still goes on.
Which is probably a very common situation, I'm sure. And you going up and down the line, and as we just discussed, probably can't afford to
lose my job.
To lose your job. That is one of the problems of the workplace and indeed of life. Getting along with people who are not behaving well, My great sympathies on that. When the behavior is really outrageous, such as the gender discrimination we were just talking about, or there are now more legal protections where you can go to a human resources department or even to a lawyer. But yes, I wish I could solve all the unpleasantness in the world with a few nice words, but you can't.
Yes. Thank you, Anna.
I already said, it's like she's gone through two. She's not just myself. She's gone over other people's heads. And everybody else, she's played the boss card.
That's your tattletale bully tactic. And I wouldn't pay attention to that. You need to go above people's heads if you're not getting satisfaction. And it is very unfortunate if you continue not to get satisfaction.
How do you, Judith Martin, say to your superior, how do you say the words so that you are reminding the superior that it's getting in the way of the work?
That's exactly the thing that you emphasize. You say, this is affecting our work. You don't say, I don't like this person, or he's obnoxious, or he's doing this or that. You say, this is interfering with work.
Mm-hmm.
And I would certainly think that would make an impression upon someone who is in a managerial position.
Thank you so much for your call, Anna. There is, Judith Martin, this thing about training, management training, and it's in short supply in a lot of workplaces.
Yes. One of the reasons I was extremely glad to have my son working with me on this job is he's been in a number and is in an executive position. And my sympathies were always just with the employee. And he said, there are a lot of difficulties for the manager, too. It's terrible to be fired, but it's terrible to have to fire someone. So he was giving me that other point of view.
What is the right way to fire someone beyond legally?
With dignity, which people tend not to do, and with the understanding that they're going to be angry and upset and so on, and just absorbing that because that's part of the situation.
Responsibility.
Yes.
Paul Faith Middleton with Judith Martin, Miss Manners Minds Your Business is her book. Go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering what you do with people who drop very leading questions seeking to identify the other person's politics or political affiliation.
Uh-huh.
In the past, I don't know if I've been rude, but I've just basically said that, I don't think, politics ought to be any part of, this job. Okay,
exactly.
That's not what I'm here to
exactly.
do.
Exactly. Now, I don't know how subtle those leading questions were. But I think just a cheerful, I don't talk politics at work, and dismiss it, because you can't win in that way. And you do not need that extra antipathy a person who doesn't share your politics is going to have. And so why declare them?
Yeah, I've gotten the feeling in the past that by not answering, by not reaffirming the other person's politics, that's all the information that they were seeking.
Yes, but it's still better than giving them the ammunition to attack you for your politics.
Yeah.
Because, yes. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye, Paul. There's a letter in the book that you receive where someone, by mistake, receives an email. How many times has this happened?
Mm-hmm.
From a business associate, opens the email, reads a couple sentences, realizes this is very personal, and in this case it was medical, not meant for me, and graciously didn't read further and shut it down. And then the question was, this sender is going to figure it out that it's gone to me. What do I do? Do I say to the sender, listen, I received this by mistake. I didn't read it. What do you do when you get an email by mistake? Do you acknowledge it or say nothing?
Well, letting them figure out is better than giving them the certainty that you now know all about their medical problems. It is such a common thing. You really would think that by now, people would have learned to look at the address line before they push send, but they don't. Received by mistake.
Janine Faith Middleton, welcome to the show with Judith Martin. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Janine.
I'm really glad that you guys are doing the show. I've just recently started a new position about 2 months ago. And my supervisor hired me as well as I've been interviewed by other people, and it's for accounting position. And I work very closely with my supervisor, and she's a graduate student with English. And every time I do something via email or letter-wise, like, she really, really gets on me about my grammar. And it wouldn't really bother me too much if she wasn't insulting about it. He always kind of says, like, my generation this, my generation that, like, we don't know any better. And it's kind of getting hard for me on the workplace. I kind of stress out going into work and having to be around her. And I always try to, like, be friendly and, like, have small talk with her. But I'm always kind of scared to, because she always corrects me. And it
just sounds very obnoxious. Even I don't go around correcting other people. It's rude. I think you have to say, you know, I so much admire the way you write. I'm sorry I don't meet your standards, but I don't think this is the appropriate place for me to be corrected and take lessons from you.
Is this your boss?
Yes,
it is your boss.
Is it mail that you're sending out to other people? The boss may feel, in that case, that she's training you to clean up the language and grammatically, so to make a better impression on the clients or the customers, in which case I think you should listen.
I do listen on that, but, like, sometimes when I just make, like, minor mistakes of, like, a comma usage, or she's really good with nouns and everything.
Well,
and
I mean, does it affect, is this something
like
that's
that?
Going, that affects what your boss might perceive as the reputation of the business?
That's what she says, too, and, like, that part I understand, but, like, usually, like, not in front of people, but, like, people can still
well,
hear.
Well, okay, then let's,
like,
modify. Let me modify what I said, then. In that case, I would say, you know, I really appreciate, you know, your things, and I'm trying to learn to write better, but could you not do it in front of other people?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I'm not sure if, like, other people hear, but sometimes she says things like, this kind of makes you look incompetent. I don't think you know what you're talking about sometimes. And I'm like, well, that's
just
rude.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh. Hey, Janine, thank you so much. I hope it gets better. And Judith Martin, thank you so much.
Well,
and
I'm delighted to have been here. Thank you.
Best of luck.
Callers,
thank you. Best of luck to your relationship with your son now working together. I think that's great.
Yes,
thank you.
Yes, and my daughter, too, works.
Oh, wow.
It's wonderful.
It's a corporation.
Put your children to work. Yeah.
The Martin Company. Thank you. As always, this show is about the richness of life. The book, Miss Manners, Mind Your Business. Find the books, people, great recipes, value wines, and cocktails we feature right now, including the best chicken cacciatore ever at WNPR.org. Click on Programs and see the Food Schmooze link. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.